Today we'll hear a talk on steps 8 and 9. And let me just read the two steps. Step 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Step 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Please give a warm welcome to John F. from Donegal Island. You're on, John.
You're on to the John Alcoholic. It's good to see you all, and hope you all had a good Christmas. And it's all looking a wee bit heavier. It must have been a good dinner. And but yeah, good to be here. I don't normally do this, folks. This is a rarity, I can tell you. I'm a more behind the scenes kind of a worker, but I agreed to give this a go. So yeah, as I say, good to be here. I'll just give you a quick brief outline, some of my thing, a bit of my background of how I got here and the rest of it. You know, as I say, I grew up here in the northwest of Ireland, and you know, just because I'm from Ireland and automatically set me out to be on the road to an alcoholic, I just want to get that out there. For I've had a lot of the leprechaun jokes and all that crap, and you know, so don't come at me with that stuff or I'll go back at you. But let's get that out of the way. But yeah, growing up here, it was the area I grew up in, it was there were conflict going on in the time, and when you grew up in it, for me it seemed normal watching the British Army walking around the streets with guns and armored cars all over the place, and things, you know, that just seemed normal, and helicopters flying all over the place. You know, at a young age, I didn't understand what was going on, but there was a lot of tension in there. You picked it up, you know, you could feel it, you could sense it off people, you know. So that was a kind of the environment growing up in that environment. I grew up with two sisters and myself. My mother, she lost six of us, and so that was very hard on her. I don't remember a great deal about that. I was very young at the time. So it was, but so there was a lot of things went on, you know. And I don't know about anyone else's, but in my home, nothing was ever talked about. It was all kept quiet and not dealt with, you know. And what I've come to learn from Alcoholics Anonymous is what used people told me is I'm only as sick as my secrets. And I understand what that means today. But so that was growing up. Like one parent would have took a good drop of alcohol, the other parent didn't touch it. But the parent that did it didn't agree with them at all, and they were very violent with it when they were taking the stuff. And as a result, there was many a time we were on the end of that, and that doesn't be pretty. It wasn't nice, you know. But the growing up environment, it was, the parents are supposed to keep an eye out for you and look out for you. And there was one of my parents, I was scared stuff of them, you know, they frightened me, you know, because of their temper and the way they would be when they took alcohol, stuff like that. So as I say, there was a bit of moving about geographical as well, so at a young age, due to my father's work. I started school out in Africa. That's where I started school. Yeah, you didn't know that to me, did you? And yeah, I started it out there in Zambia. I've got memories of it, but I can still clearly see the first day I went to school. My mother took me in, and I had all these strange faces. I don't know what was going on. And, you know, I waited until I got that teacher's back turned, and I was out that door away, you know. Where I was going, I haven't a clue, but just that environment, you know. And that was to be the start of a school experience that wasn't too good for me, you know. I didn't realize until I was in my 30s that dyslexia and other things, you know, learning difficulties, but at that time they thought it was because you weren't interested and they would take it out on you. You know that moment where they take you up to their classroom in front of everybody and go to the board and go, right, work this out and show me how you do it. You know, oh God, you know, that was, I would freeze in that moment, my head would go a blank, and it's like, oh God, you just wish the ground would swallow you up, you know. Of course, they think you're, because the teacher beforehand has explained everything, she thinks you should remember and, you know, put it back to her. So you're deliberately doing this on purpose. We're saying she would take it out on you. But that was some of it. Again, a lot of geographic, stayed there 3 years, came back, came home to Ireland, stayed there a couple of years. Then the father decided he wanted to go to London. I hated London. I got bullied something terrible about London. Because no matter where you went, you were called a Paddy or a Mick. And any time I came home then, I was called a Brit. He didn't fit in wherever you went, you know, from a young age. But these type of things, you know, that was that's some of the things that shaped my thing. But we came home in the back in the early 80s, and things were very bad at home at that time. There was the hunger strikers were going on at that time, and there was 10 men, they fasted to death. So that over the British, they wanted to criminalize their cause. They were political prisoners, and they wouldn't be criminalized. And so 10 of them went on a hunger strike. And things were really bad at home at that time. There was a lot of tension and anger in people and stuff. So we came back into that. You just try your best to survive, you know, getting by and getting on, trying to work, you know, and people trying to look out for their families and stuff, all that. So that was some of the things. I took my first drink when I was about 13. That was just after about the mid-80s. And no great plan to take it or whatever. It didn't, no real thing. But it was, you felt kind of guilty because you weren't supposed to be doing it. Because we have a thing over here in Ireland called the plague. I don't know if you people know it. Maybe the American Irish Catholics will know what I'm talking about here. But this pledge, they make you take it at 12 years old here. Your confirmation. I didn't want to take it because I knew rightly I wouldn't stick to it. You have to be 18 before alcohol passes your lips. And that's the deal, right? So at 13, I broke the thing anyway, and so I felt a bit guilty about that, you know. So right from the bat, my drinking, you know, there was a bit of shame and guilt and hiding about it, you know. Stuff like that. As I say, there was no great thing going out with friends, maybe having a few drinks. I carry it, stuff like that, you know. But looking back, what I've learned in Alcoholics Anonymous is what alcohol did for me was it soothed my head. That's what it did. It soothed my head. I didn't get no great high or, you know, or flashes of light. It was just it soothed my head. And it's like being able to breathe out and relax. That's what it did for me. Because I was always a deep thinker and sensitive, awkward brain. Certain people, you know, this debate, internal debate going on in your head around a lot of stuff. But when I took alcohol, that didn't seem to matter, you know, that. But what I didn't realize then was somewhere deep down, I had found some kind of a solution or an answer. I didn't realize that then. I only found that out when I came about here and started to go through your steps, what the deal was here. Initially, I didn't have much trouble with alcoholism. It cost me anything. You know, I left school, went over to London. There was no work about here at that time. A lot of the sectarian killings was very bad at that time, the late 80s, early 90s. So I went over to London to get a bit of work, and a lot of Irish over there at that time in London. So I wouldn't have drank too much, maybe one night on the weekend, and then two nights on the weekend. We talk about this being a progressive thing. That's what happened to me slowly over time. You know, and back and forward, I wouldn't have missed days off work. It was all that was okay, you know. Then I went and started doing the work my father used to do. He worked in red power lines, and there was good money. And a lot of those guys were heavy drinkers. And funny, a lot of them, their family life had broke up and stuff, you know, as a result of working away from home and all that. So I tried to fit in with these guys and be a part of, for I loved hearing their stories in the bar, you know, things they used to do and things, places they'd been, all that sort of stuff. Trying to fit in, but I wasn't quite capable of drinking with the men per se. Like these guys were hardened heavy drinkers. You know, I took about five or six drinks, like, and I'm slurring my words and getting unsteady on my feet, and you know, all that kind of stuff. But that's where it was, you know. As I say, eventually. It wasn't too long, a couple of years before my drinking started to cause me problems, missing days of work. I remember my first experience of taking the DTs after a heavy 3 week bout of drinking. I decided I would just stop, and I didn't realize how dangerous that is. And I had the most craziest dreams. There was someone driving nails up through the heels of my feet. but there was no blood coming out of my feet. It was really weird. All that kind of stuff. Getting jittery in the morning, as our book talks about, had that, all that. You know. Came back home at a time. There was a good friend of mine who was killed at home, a very good friend, and that hit me hard, you know. He had a horrible death, like, you know, a really bad death. And I'd kind of set out for one another, keep an eye for one another, and I felt guilty because I wasn't there or whatever, you know. Young lad trying to get your head around it all mixed up. And of course, you take alcohol to deal with that. That's how I cope with it. But I carried a lot of guilt for a lot of years, you know, and stuff like that. So, as I say, again, I didn't realize that that was my solution. I found this way as solution as a way to live. You see, our book talks about delusions. And that just doesn't mean about alcohol. It means about my thinking as well, you know. But alcohol definitely helped me through like situations like that when I was guilty or sad or anger, or whatever. Or especially with resentments, I took, you know, that would be my way to deal with that. I didn't really connect all the dots until I came in here. So as I say, started causing me problems, came back home, you know, got into relationships. They didn't last because of me drinking after a while. They didn't want to spend their life with someone who was a drinker. And I didn't see what the problem was, but they were like, nah, you know, no. Nah. Maybe they grew up with experiences where their father being a drinker, so they didn't want that. You know, so none of that lasted. But, you know, well, down the road, it did start to cause me a lot of problems at the end up. It wasn't the amount of drink it was taking, it was the effect it was having on me. A lot of blackouts in my drinking. I did stuff I have to this day of no recollection. And treating people and behaving with people and hurting people as a result. You know, this alcoholic became very selfish and manipulative and was all take. That's how I ended up being. I didn't set out in life to be that way, but that's how it evolved. And as I say, done the geographicals, I was getting into a lot of trouble here at home, with police and army and stuff, and I buggered off over to England again, doing the work I'd done with my dad. And but a lot of them guys have noticed the difference in me and my drinking. You know, we talk about in Alcoholics Anonymous going through your stages of alcohol. First, it's joviality, it does something for us, and then we knew that the function. And then we drink for oblivion. I didn't know what was that, but these guys noticed the change in me, you know, and I brought the bad habits with me, missing days of work, being unreliable at work because of the state of men coming under work drunk. People don't like working with people like that. It caused a lot of troubles, you know, losing jobs then because of being unreliable, falling out with co-workers, you know, and that. But I met a girl, she was a barmaid, funny enough, and we started going out, and pretty soon she became pregnant, which certainly wasn't in my plans. But if you have unprotected sex, yeah, you know, these things happen, John, you know. But so with that, and I made the resolution I was going to get my act together for my daughter and square up and not behave like the way my father did. But lo and behold, the whole show seemed to fall apart, and I couldn't understand what was going on. Another company partner, you know, when my daughter was a couple of months old, she would hold her up and say, "Do you not love her? Can you not stop drinking for her?" I loved my daughter, but I couldn't stop drinking for her. And I didn't understand why that was. You know, you rationalize and internalize as because of this and that. And then, you know, I concluded there's something very bad with me. Like, I'm rotten. You're better away from me. People are better away from me. So the isolation takes on and the loneliness. You know, but needless to say, the relationship broke up. I came back home and I spent a year at home, and it wasn't nice, you know. Caused a lot of hurt for my family, brought a lot of trouble to their door. Had my mother's heart broke, was stole off her and did everything. You know, lied to her, police was constantly there, you know. And these type of things, you know, suicide attempts, done all that, malnutrition, you know, all that. But somewhere, someday, you know, something clicked. I remember one time being badly sick and dry heaving, and I remember saying, "If there's someone out there, please effing help me, because I'm dying here." And I didn't realize that was a prayer that day. And for a week or two later, something changed in my head. I realized I needed help. And that was the start of the journey for me in here. The doctor gave me Librium medical stuff. I had never had any of that. You know, I always went cold turkey. And he explained to me the danger of that. You know, the danger of doing that. You know, he says, to detox, you need medical treatment. A bit talks about it a lot. You know. So that was the start of that. Then going to a treatment center. I wasn't too comfortable in the treatment center because you had to talk, sit in a group and talk. I don't know about the rest of these, but I'm a closed book. That's the environment I grew up in. It was a way of surviving. The police used to interrogate you a lot, you know, asking you about such and such, and we want you to inform and that, and you done that. That was a death sentence for you. So you said nothing to nobody, no matter what did it to you. So that was very difficult for me, starting to open up a bit and these type of things. But, you know, I remember watching a video with a cassette player. It's going back a wee while, folks. It's before these DVDs or whatever you watch nowadays. But and it showed us in this video how many brain cells die in a blackout. And that's, I sat up the rest of the night trying to count how many times I had blackouts. You know, it's amazing I can even remember my name. You know, the amount of brain cells I fried drinking. But so we learned all that. And then the last day we said to the guy, what's the success rate here? And he says, the people that go to Alcoholics Anonymous and stay. They're the ones that seem to do the best. I didn't understand what he meant then, but I remember going to the local meetings here, and I can only share my experience here. This is all my experience. There wasn't a great community like there does be in the States of recovery sponsorship program traditions. In my area, that was practically non-existent. State of AA in my area would be, come to meetings, don't lift a drink, you'll be okay. You know, talk to somebody now and again for coffee about stuff that's bothering you. That was the height of AA around my area. You would get the odd person float in that would talk different, i.e. talk about programming steps. You know, so I came about here after a couple of months. A lot of old feelings and stuff started coming back, and I had no alcohol to help me deal with that or quell that. The old emotions and guilt and shame, especially resentments. My head was savage with resentment. And I remember trying to talk to guys after meetings, telling them what's going on with me. And that's all I heard. Go to meetings and don't drink, you'll be okay. And after about 7 months, I remember saying to a guy, I'm not okay. I don't know what's going on here, but I am not okay. Doing what I'm doing isn't easing this. And he just shrugged his shoulders as if to say, what do you want me to do about it? So that's the environment I grew up in. That's not a pity story. That's just the reality it was for me. So I stuck it for about nearly 2 years, and I went back out drinking. And I had to do that for my own sanity, for it was breaking up, you know. And I went out drinking for 6 days. And like the book tells us, if you want the convincer, go on out and give it another go. And that's the way it had to be for me. And two lessons I learned out of that was, one, I had to become willing, and two, I had to become honest, self-honest. And I had to ask myself, what do you need to do different this time, John, you didn't do the last time? So I had to branch out. I had to travel to find people that were on a bit recovery. And I got into the Joe and Charlie tapes, and that was a good help for it. Opened up their big book, and I became a big advocate for them around the area. I drove everybody crackers at meetings, you know, and you know, it was the kind of the blind leading the blind. I found something that gave me a bit of hope when I was hanging on to it. And I thought everybody would want to share in this good news, but I found out they didn't. But I can see where I was going wrong. I was preaching to them, telling them what they should be doing. And alcoholics don't like that. Like, you know, they're like, screw you, pal, you know. So, yeah, a bit of that going on. But that's where I was, you know. Getting on with life, found someone. I've had different people help me with different stages of our program. One guy could explain step one, another guy could do step two, and it was a bit mish and mash. Again, not a great community of sponsorship, but like, that's the problem. So different people at different times have helped me out, you know, and my first attempt at doing steps 8 and 9, looking at it and going through it, you know, and I kind of figured from Joe and Charlie, right, the doing the infantry, let's hang on to that because you'll need that in step 8. I thought, oh, all right, okay. But as looking back now, as regards to, you know, how I'm making amends, who I'm making amends to, what am I making amends for, and how am I making amends, that, you know, I don't really understand that or look at that. you know, it was just like a, it was like a fourth, the first fourth step. It was like a basic dive into it and see, just see what happens, you know, and making amends to people. And so the big one on my list was my father, you know, a lot of resentment there. So things like that, looking, going through it, and you know, why I had the resentment, all that sort of stuff. Same with the mother, same with work colleagues, ex-partner, all that sort of stuff. You know, and then I seemed to skip from there, from four and five, and go to eight and nine. I forgot about the six and seven, you know. So I'm there. Basically, what I was doing was apologizing when I look back to them. So I'm going to my father and my mother, and I'll talk with the father and mother, and then the sister. And you know, when the sister came to live with me for a couple of years, and that, oh my God, I was like a shock to the system, because at that time I got into all the fitness stuff, became very regimental. And my sister, if you know her, she's happy-go-lucky, patty-go-easy, leaves stuff lying around, leaves dishes lying around. And that's like an electric shock to my system. That drives me crackers. So I'm looking at this stuff, and I'm looking at her going, you know, and it's just, the anger's building up. But the problem is, I don't know how to communicate, as in, say, about, you know, about cleaning up or this. It has to, I can't get the words right. That's always been my problem. And then I get frustrated. So it either comes out a ball of anger, or I have to make a joke of it to get my point across. The problem I had making a joke about it, they take it as a joke and don't do anything. And that makes it worse, see? So that's where I was at. But I lost the head with her, and, you know, and it took me about 2 weeks to say sorry to her. And I thought that was, you know, I was, God, wasn't I great? Big claps in the back for me for saying sorry. And this went on a couple of times. Till the third time, she says, take your apology and stick it up your arse. She says, there's something badly wrong with you. You need to check yourself out. The way you're behaving is wrong. I'm not accepting your apology. And oh my God, it was like, how dare you? You know? So it was, get out of the house. That's it. I want you out. And she decided, I'm going nowhere. So, stalemate. But it was about a week or two later that dawned on me, why am I going on like this? No six and seven. No six and seven. No change. No change. You know. So that was one of the experiences I had, back and forth, back and forth. And for me, a lot of, what really opened up a lot of this was the advent of COVID and the online meetings. And I got to hear you people out in America and that. And I was saying to myself, now this is more like my type of people here now. Because it can get frustrating and lonely when you're the only voice sailing in the wind, or whistling in the wind about this stuff. So, you know, I got enthusiastic again back in, and through different things, book studies, different people taking me through the steps. And this time, you know, the way it was suggested, you know, step eight, the way it was, I'll just share with the way it was explained to me and the way I went through it. You know, get an index card. You know, these three 5x3 index cards. Get them here. Get a bunch of them, Jim. The system, I think you're going to need a bunch of them, so just buy a whole pack. That's that'll do. So I John gets a whole pack and going through it, and then it's like, so they basically told me what the step, you know, why I'm doing what I'm doing. What's the deal here behind these? And basically, it was about my modus, you know, trying to set the record right. Putting something back to its right place, or better than the way it was before I came on the scene, you know. And you know, and all that. So I liked hearing that, because it was like, all right, just I kind of like knowing what I'm doing with stuff. So we looked at that, you know. So it's a sincere, as the page 77 says, a sincere desire to right or wrong stuff we got. So the actions we take, you know, like a demonstration of goodwill. I used to read this. What does this mean? So I'm going now, making amends to people, an action of goodwill to try and make it, and straighten out my past if I offend people. So step eight, like it says, you know, this, it's about preparation. You know, am I willing to do something? It's about getting ready and willing. That's it. That's the way it was said to me. So it's spiritual as well as kind of logistical. I've got it. It's like a prep step. That's the way it kept saying to me. This is a prep step. So the spiritual preparation is, if I haven't the will to do this, I pray until it comes. So like step six, if I'm not willing with the deal, I pray until the willingness comes. Same deal here. And there was another wee prayer they gave me. It says, God, please remove my fears. Show me your truth. Show me all the harms I have caused with my behavior. Lord, make me willing to make amends to one and all. That's what they had me say. And they hit if there was a couple I wasn't ready with. Then they explained the logistical prep. And this is what really helped me was writing out in the card was the who. Who am I making amends to? List the names on the card, you know. Then it says what, then below that, you know, what am I making amends for? So it was like, you know, like say my mother, I'll take my mother for instance. The what was I stole from her, right? But I just kind of take a brief note. So I stole money from her in the early teens, all the way through my teens up until me drinking, brought hassle to her door, you know, the cops and police. Lied to her constantly about things I was doing, and then when I was away from home, I wouldn't bother contacting her. And, like I'm that selfish. I didn't. As long as I'm all right, that's it. And she's sitting up all night wondering about where John is, and you know all this. No consideration for her at all. You know, these are the type of things. You know, so I'm selfish and dishonest and inconsiderate. All these type of things that I've learned from step 4 and 5. This is how I'm behaving out in step 8. So this is what I listed it all out here. So then it was, you know, going through that physically with her about, you know, the things I've done. Just bullet points, quick bullet points. And then it's like, how am I prepared to make amends to you? Well, one of the ways, pay her back the money. You know, it doesn't have to be a lump sum. I arrange a deal and sort it out each week. Try and be around more, be in more contact with her, help her out instead of ignoring her. Do them type of things. You know, be more pleasant to be around. When I'm around her, have a long face. I'm doing something I don't want to do, or do I bring joy to the thing? That's how it was explained to me. You know, so look, you know, trying that and the why, and explaining why I was making amends was important, because I was saying, well, one of the reasons is I'm trying to live a better way now in Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, and if I don't do this, man, you know, I might even get over my alcoholism, because the book talks about people literally have skimmed on the step as in cleaning house, it comes back and bites them. So I was told, you know, bring that up. You know, so I did and brought that up with her and, you know, things like that. But then I asked her a couple of questions, you know, I says, is there any harms I've caused you that I may not know about, because there was a lot of blackout in my drinking. And she brought up a couple of things, you know, and to listen to that. The other thing was, you know, is there anything else I can do to right this wrong? Is there anything you can tell me that I haven't thought of? You know, and she just says, no, just stay sober. I'm just happy that you're sober. And, you know, some of the things that I did, you asked, how did you make her feel? And it was explained to me it's important to listen to that, you know, to get feedback on that. Because it's trying to knock me out of that last bit of selfishness and inconsideration. This is how my behavior affects other people. Now, that's just my mother, but right across the board, the relationships, everything else, you know, all that. So then, you know, when I got all this spread out in the card and stuff, I went to my sponsor with it, and they looked through it, and we talked about it. And then we started doing about the when ever. Or wherever, it's you know, not wherever, whenever, and it explained a bit of that. So the first contact was a phone call. The next contact was face-to-face amends. That's how quick it was done. No hanging about, and it says face-to-face. And that's what I did. So it was like, arrange the time, you know, and amends, direct amends, face-to-face, when, where, wherever possible, and when not to make them. Going to cause hurt. I had one of those amends. I couldn't make an amend to somebody because for them to find out whether it would have hurt them. So I couldn't make an amends. And that was all explained to me. And that's very important. Before you go doing any amends, that was the importance of step 8. So then in step 9, plucking up the thing face to face, and I sat down and shared what I said with them. Yes, I had fear. Yes, I had a bit of anxiety, all the rest of it. That's natural and understandable. I asked them the questions. A lot of time, a lot of people just says, I'm glad you're sober. There's one or two who came up with a few things, especially the ex-partner. You know, when the big thing for her that came across was, I didn't care. Came across, I didn't care. And she found that that really helped me, you know. And I could really see how my behavior came across as I didn't care, especially when my daughter was concerned. There she is trying to bring up the wee girl, and there's us John doing drinking and, you know, not being responsible and all this sort of stuff. All that, you know. So we sat down and talked, and, you know, how can I make this better? Because the thing is, then my behavior has to change from that point on, how I treat them, how I talk about them. So my ex-partner, instead of it always been her over in England, it was Alison, the mother of my daughter, over in England, backing her up and praising her to my family, who used to run her down because we split up. Families get tribal a bit with this stuff. So that was one of the things that was told to me and what I try to do today. And, you know, this stuff works because my mindset around people today is different from what it is. I had a very toxic mindset around people, you know, and today it's a lot better. I can live and let live, as our slogans talk about, give another person the right to be wrong, try and see someone from their point of view instead of diving in, all these type of things, you know. But the direct amend face-to-face, you know, had a big, big impact on me. Because again, what an alcohol used to initially do for me, helping me to breathe out and quieten my head, I find these steps have done that. And that's a good deal, you know. So I was able to make my peace with other people and settle that. And going forward then, you know, creating an ideal relationship, a better relationship with everyone I meet. Things you got. So that's just some of my experience in step 8 and 9. I ain't a talker, folks, so God knows this is amazing. I've talked this long. Anyway, so love and blessings to you all, and that's it for me.